We're back with more of Lake Effect Now on Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. If the Smithsonian Institution is known as the nation's attic, the Wisconsin Historical Society holds that distinction here. But leaders from the Historical Society believe the attic could use some significant work. So they'll be in southeastern Wisconsin later this week looking for input on how to best tell the story of our state.
Planning is underway for an ambitious new Museum of Wisconsin History in Madison, and the effort involves dozens of meetings with communities and demographic groups around the state. This week's meetings are in Kenosha and Racine. Christian Overland is the Ruth and Hartley Barker Director of the Wisconsin Historical Society, and he joins us by phone from Madison. Welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be with you on the air, Mitch.
Well, so let's talk about the Museum of Wisconsin History. Why does this or should this museum matter to Wisconsinites?
Well, the Wisconsin Historical Society is one of the premier state history agencies in the United States. And the reason why I say premier is because we have a fantastic state collection, but also a national collection of North American history that not many people know about. So whether it's Thomas Jefferson letters or Abraham Lincoln shawl or Daniel Boone's manuscripts or an amazing civil rights archive, we want to democratize those stories, artifacts, and lives with a new state-of-the-art 21st century museum so everybody in Wisconsin and our region can benefit from it.
Well, and so for people who have not visited the current space, paint a picture of it and tell us what's lacking in the current museum.
Oh, so the current museum is on the Capitol Square, right across the street from the state capitol in Madison, Wisconsin. It's in a Wolf Hubli former hardware store. And what I mean by that, it was purposely built as a hardware store building. We moved into it in 1983, and it never was meant to be a museum. So if you think about a hardware store, you know, from the 60s and 50s, when it was put together, it's got about 9-foot ceilings, not 20-foot ceilings, what a museum needs today. If you think about a 5-bedroom house being built, you know, now in like a suburb of any kind of city in America, think about as many bathrooms in there, probably 5. That's what it has, is the number of bathrooms to serve 78,000 people a year. So it's woefully undersized. We cannot actually get enough school kids in there. And I'll give you another metric. We have close to 72,000 school kids that visit the Capitol on our tours every year. Only 22,000 students are able to go through the museum because it's not sized appropriately enough to receive them. So we have a market of people that just we cannot serve. It's just too small. And thinking about the size of the building, we can't even put some of our significant artifacts in there because it's not environmentally controlled. So we cannot actually exhibit Abraham Lincoln's shawl in there for any length of time because it'll get burned up by bad light and bad humidity. You know, it's not good. The other thing about it, some of our most beloved artifacts, like the 1969 Oscar Mayer Wienermobile, that can't even fit through the door. So we really need to build a museum to democratize this collection and create access for everyone.
Museums aren't just about size and space, though, right? It's about the way you're able to tell the story.
Absolutely. And you said it. It's not just about objects and artifacts. It's about storytelling. We have great stories to tell. And that's how people learn, is the tradition of storytelling. So in a history museum, it's more than just the objects. It's about how do you put together these narratives for the public, whether it's for families, students, teachers, enthusiasts, and do it in such a way that they find it dynamic and joyful. And it delivers a wow factor. That's the other thing. We've got these great collections. Why not develop an experience that really is meaningful and memorable? And we want it to be inspirational for future generations to learn from.
Well, so talk about why now. Why are the finances such that this is the time to set out on this project?
Governor Thompson, 20 years ago, had the idea of building this new state museum. And we have been working on it ever since then. Governor Thompson tried to move it forward. He went to become Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services in Washington, D.C. Governor Doyle took it on, and it was not the best economy to build a museum. Governor Walker took it on, and he was working with us, and he actually worked with the Department of Administration to give us a letter that gave us confidence that if we raised the amount of money, which is $30 million for a capital budget and another $20 million for an endowment, that they would enumerate $70 million. So Governor Walker stepped forward with that with their Department of Administration. And so we've raised a significant amount of money towards that. And the state is looking at it right now and evaluating it in their budget. And we're hopeful that this is going to get done. It's time to do this for Wisconsin. We deserve the best.
And I gather Governor Evers is supportive of this as well?
Governor Evers put it in the budget, to your point. Governor Evers put it in his capital budget, in his proposed capital budget, and every governor from Thompson, Doyle, Walker, and now Governor Evers has moved this forward.
Well, and so to that end, there is a pretty ambitious set of community meetings that you're doing. What's the objective for these meetings, which, as we're talking, include sessions in Kenosha and Racine this week and down the road in Milwaukee as well?
That's correct, Mitch. So when we think about our state history and our national history because of this fantastic collection, the thing is that keeps coming back to us is this is really the people's museum. So why not build a museum that's designed for the people, by the people? And so what we're doing since October 1st of last year, we're visiting more than 60 locations, 45 cities, all 11 Native American nations, to listen to their stories, what stories need to be told, and how they want that museum to operate. And it's fantastic what we're learning. We'll be, by the time we're done with this, the end of July, have spoken to 5,000 people personally about this project.
Well, and as you go to these places, and I know you still have a lot of meetings ahead of you, how much affinity are you finding that people around the state feel for this museum, which is located, you know, some significant distance from many of them?
Well, that's a great question, Mitch. What people have been talking about with this museum is, first of all, they love the state they live in. They want to know more about those stories, but they also want to share their stories, which are locally significant and have statewide and some national impact. So to give you a viewpoint, we were up at Superior, Wisconsin, October 1st, and we knew that shipping would be a big story. We didn't know that the way they felt about their shipping during World War II was part of the arsenal of democracy, that all the iron ore that they were putting out through the Great Lakes to fuel steel to be built for tanks and things that the Army needed to help save our democracy and win World War II, they feel that pride. Okay? So when we're in La Crosse, they feel that the river is a huge story. The river, Mississippi River, has defined La Crosse from their viewpoint, and they live with the river every day, and they want people in the world to know how important the Mississippi is for them. Milwaukee, for instance, machine shop to the world in the 19th to 20th century, and now is emerging as, you know, insurance and banking and high tech and many other things. What people want, Mitch, is they want to be able to share those stories. Through state-of-the-art technology, we can actually connect people as a history hub all across the state and make those stories available. And people in Superior, we can have a program with our curators down here, and they can see it live. Or what's even cooler is we have underwater archaeologists, so when they're in a dive, let's say under Lake Michigan, they can actually speak with people through their masks and GoPro cameras and microphones, and they could be live with school children up in Superior or at another museum up there or anywhere else in the state. And when I think about, like, the International Space Station, how school kids can talk to the commanders up there and live and ask questions, we want to do that with state history because we have a great history to tell and a great history to share.
It sounds like you're talking about kind of a convening ability.
It is, and that's why I call it a history hub. It's a way to convene people. And there's another thing, too. When we talked to the Lakota Ray up in Hayward, Wisconsin, the Ojibwe Nation up there, they were interested in being part of that hub, sharing their craft traditions, moccasin making, and wild ricing techniques. They have brand new innovations through the rest of the state. So we feel that that is our role, too, not just as a museum as bricks and mortar, but as a museum of the 21st century that can connect people digitally and really be meaningful to them in their daily lives.
I gather you're also seeking input. You mentioned the Lakota Ray. You're meeting with other various specific demographic groups as well, right?
Yes. So all kind of multicultural techniques are going in. We're meeting with individual communities. The other thing, whether it's the Asian community, African-American communities, Latino communities, and it's just not one, right? We're meeting with people, Latino communities in Milwaukee, Madison, Hmong we're meeting with in Wausau, Milwaukee, Eau Claire. And so we're really doing our due diligence around the state, thinking about what is rural, what is urban, what is geographically different, and also age, like you said, too. So we're talking to school groups. We're actually going to schools, talking to the children, and actually as young as 8-year-olds and 10 to 12-year-olds, and then teenagers were convening focus groups to help with the museum, not just now, but beyond that, to test our concepts. Really important, because it's engaging the community, because again, this gets back to, it's the people's museum, designed for the people, by the people.
How important are these meetings to the overall fundraising effort?
Well, I think the meetings are really important to the overall fundraising effort, because I think of a fundraising effort as just relationship building. And people want to invest in a good relationship and a good organization. And so in terms of are people see that the new museum can help with quality of life throughout the entire state, and people hear about that in their community of what this new museum can do in their community, I think it absolutely helps out with people who want to invest in this big idea, which is a public and private partnership.
Obviously, the state budget process is still underway. At the same time, do you feel is the clock ticking on this project? Do you feel a deadline looming?
So our timeline that we're working under right now is because it's time to build this building. We want to get it done so we can address the school markets and family markets and the people who really want this museum built. So now is our time for that. And so, like I said before, we've raised significant funds towards that direction. It's kind of on the quiet side of a capital campaign. I don't want to give that number out now because that number's changing every day. And by the time we get to this fall, we will be in the schematic mode, and we're ready to design and then move to the next level. So we're on target to open up in late 2024 and early 2025. Depending on what the contractor we get who wants to build it will tell us they can do in their schedule, which is a ways off.
The museum is currently in this former hardware store on the Capitol Square. Where would the new building be?
Same place. We own this building that we're in right now, and it would be a bigger building. It's a footprint size close to about 17,000 square feet now. It'll be a 100,000 square foot building. So it'll go down to across from the Overture Center. And then also across from Madison Public Library.
And taller ceilings and more bathrooms.
That's right. Taller ceilings, more bathrooms. The ceilings are going to be 25 feet tall. And so we're able to put our largest artifacts in there. But also, it's, you know, getting people into a larger space. It's going to be a great civic building. And it's going to be a space that will be there for hundreds of years to come.
And would you imagine that the Wienermobile will have its own room?
Will the Wienermobile have its own room?
Yes.
I don't know. I think the Wienermobile may have its own huge exhibit. You know, we collect a lot of stories with that. It's a lot of fun, from people who worked in the Oscar Mayer plant to people, even college kids who've driven the Wienermobiles throughout the years. It is a riot. But it's meaningful history to us because of our foodways, right? Oscar Mayer is a huge company for Wisconsin. And so that history means a lot to people, not only in the state, but around the world.
Well, Christian Overland, thank you so much, and hope we can check in with you along the way.
Please do, Mitch. Love to keep you and your listeners apprised of this new museum project, which will be the next great museum for Wisconsin.
Thank you so much. Best of luck.
Best of luck, Mitch. All the best.
Christian Overland is the Ruth and Hartley Barker Director of the Wisconsin Historical Society. The Historical Society holds community meetings in Kenosha and Racine this week to get input on plans for a new state history museum. Another meeting will happen next month in Milwaukee. You can learn more about the project and the community meetings from a link at wuwm.com.